Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is Neat. It's a weekly booze cast.
It's a history lesson with a twist. Let's get twisted.
Well, we are in the beginnings of spooky season.
Oh my god, it's spooky! And also, this is our 13th episode.
Also spooky.
So spooky.
We're gonna celebrate this spooky numerical episode by bringing you 13 of our favorite liquor superstitions.
Yes! Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. So, we might as well start from the beginning. Let's start with the brewing process.
All right. What you got?
So, my favorite brewing superstition is from the distillation of pulque. It's a spirit that comes from an agave mash. So, in the Aztec period, superstitious brewers had to abstain from sex for, 7 to 14 days during the fermentation process. The thing about pulque is that it is notorious for being like it could sour for any random reason just at the drop of a hat. Speaking of hats, also.
more about hats?
Here's a segue. So hats, yes. If you wear a hat in the distillery, it is supposed to be bad luck. So the way that you counter your bad luck is that you have to fill your hat with pulque and drink it down.
That seems like, I don't know. I feel like that would cause me to accidentally wear a hat to the distillery. Oops. And be like, oh no.
I forgot I was wearing my 10-gallon hat today. Silly me.
Well, that's a... We'll remember that one. All right. So I guess if you've managed to stay celibate and hatless enough to make a good spirit, then you get to drink it. But there are a whole lot slew of superstitions involved in that.
So many things could go wrong.
Yeah. Starting with before it even touches your lips. So we've probably all seen at a bar, maybe you do it yourselves, but you don't know why, where you will tap a glass on the bar top before drinking. And I've had, in different parts of the world, people identify it as an American thing. I've heard it a Spanish thing, an Irish thing. So there's some more common, not quite mystical reasons behind it.
More like tradition.
Hear. Yeah, it's to toast the bar itself, which I like. There's the interpretation of it that it's to sort of toast to fallen friends or absent friends. Also something I like. But there's also a relation to, this comes to us from Ireland, that the reason you tap your glass is they believe that since whiskey is made, all spirits are made from fermenting, effectively rotting stuff, that evil spirits and the spirits of the dead can inhabit liquor.
Oh.
So you tap your glass to scare the ghosts away from your toast.
Oh, so that's kind of the knock on wood thing.
Yeah, and you see the same kind of tradition pops up in England, and even in Russia you find it, but theirs is a little bit more specific. Often you would spit over your left shoulder because the idea is the devil's over your left shoulder.
So you spit on this.
that's a good lead into a toast.
Try to curse
scare
me. Away,
scare the ghosts out of your whiskey, spit on the devil, toast to your friend.
You can never be too careful.
There you go.
That's perfect. Awesome. Well, the toasting itself, there's a lot of factors that could go wrong. Mm. So one thing that you probably heard that is it is bad luck to toast with water. Mm. The reason for this, actually, there's a pretty practical historical reason. Well, not practical. It's still mystical. But so according to Greek mythology, the spirits of the dead would drink from the river Lethe. And that river is named for the goddess of forgetfulness. Hmm. So what could happen if you, because the spirits would drink from the river and then they would forget about their lives. So the Greeks would actually just toast to the dead with glasses filled with water to symbolize their voyage, through the underworld on the river. So if you used water. You could do that if you were toasting the dead. Like, if you proposed a toast to somebody with water, it would be like wishing them bad luck and maybe even death. And many people believe that toasting with water is also wishing death upon yourself, since this liquid reflects like going to the underworld on that river. And we're probably going to talk about this more later, but in Spain, if you toast with water or any non-alcoholic drink, you get a specific kind of bad luck, which you might have heard in relation to another superstition, is 7 years bad sex.
Oh, no. So if I don't want to, I'm not drinking, I don't want to toast with water, so can I just toast with an empty glass?
Maybe you could in some cultures. In some cultures, it's considered a viable alternative to toasting with water, since like toasting with water is a big no-no, because that's like wishing death upon people. In some cultures, it's better to toast with water or something more palatable than to toast with nothing. In other cultures, it's worse to toast with an empty glass. In Russia, it's really bad luck. And if you toast with an empty glass, you have to finish off the bottle of whatever you were last drinking.
Now, see, that also seems like something that you will, oh no, I toasted with an empty glass. You better give me that bottle.
I mean, there's lots of ways here to be a sneaky drunk.
There you go.
Also, the kind of glass matters too. So if you have like a regular glass made of, you know, glass, then that's pretty okay to clink them together. But if you have a cup that's not made of glass, in Italy, you're not supposed to clink it. You have to use the back of your hand. You cover the part of the glass that's facing away from you with the back of your, with your hand, so that the back of your hand is what does the toasting.
Okay. So we've got the right thing in our glass. We've got the right kind of glass. You're still not out of the woods.
Now we have to actually toast, right?
Yeah, now it's time to toast. And as you alluded to earlier, there are other ways to come across sexual misfortune in the toasting. And that is, as you've probably heard this, this is first popularized in France and Germany. If you clink your glasses without eye contact, you are also doomed to 7 years bad sex.
I have friends who are really, really super serious about this one.
Yeah.
Like intense eye contact.
And it's really, it's when it's just two people sharing a toast, that's a little easier. But when you've got like eight people and you're trying to like look around and like find everybody's eyes.
I love that look of like intense and like purposeful panic when you have like a group of a bunch of people toasting and everyone's like, look at me.
Well, if you're in the Czech Republic, they have a bit of a system for this, although their toasting rituals to avoid bad sex are a bit more, there's a bit more involved. So what you do there is not only do you have to toast to each individual person in the group.
Okay.
And then you have to maintain eye contact with that person while you're toasting to them. So I guess that kind of gets around the panic.
Okay.
But you cannot cross arms when you're toasting.
Okay.
So, you know, like you have to kind of organize your choreography there.
All right. You got to be careful.
And you can't spill a drop.
Oh, wow.
So no spills, no crossed arms. And you can't touch your glass to the table until the toast is done. So if you've got 15 people there that you all have to have an individual toast to and make eye contact with, you got to hold that glass the whole time. Bad sex.
I would imagine this gets harder as the night goes on, depending upon how many toasts you've done.
Yeah, I don't know if you're like, you know, maybe just you toast that one first drink and then like there's no more toasting.
Right. God forbid somebody comes late.
I just like
or
this.
Or if it's a special occasion.
I like this because anyway, like, could you just like doom your buddy to bad sex on purpose? Like, ha ha, I'm not going to look at you. Like
it's, oh, man.
But I'm then, toasted but to you, but it's like, nope, I'm not looking at you.
But you don't you doom yourself too?
I guess so. I don't know. Maybe if you can just weaponize it if you're already in kind of a dry spell. Like, I'm not getting laid anyway, but you, I have power over you. You better buy me drinks tonight. I haven't been laid in 7 years anyway.
What if the consequence of, that's like the consequence of not making eye contact when you toast is that you have to have eye contact constantly when you're having sex, and that's why it's bad.
That's terrible.
You're doomed.
Oh no, I hate that. Please no.
Oh man, you know shit happens though.
Oh yeah,
accidents happen. Speaking of accidents,
okay,
breaking glasses.
Yep.
there we go. That's another thing that can happen, especially if you've had a long and complicated toast several times throughout the night. You might break a glass. But don't worry if you're in Russia, because they say that breaking a glass is good luck. Now, and there's actually a Russian saying that says broken dishes is good luck. It translates to that. I can't speak Russian, so I'm not going to tell you what it is in Russian. They're pretty quick to mention that as soon as anyone breaks a glass. So although a lot of Russian superstitions are just like, this is what it is, and there's not a lot of like explanation for the reason of the lore. It's just like, we've always done this. This is what it is. It's very special. But this one could be, it could have something to do with breaking glasses in Judaism, since that was like really intertwined with like Eastern European culture. But also it could just be polite, like, because if somebody breaks a glass and you know, they're going to feel bad, spirits are going to be down, you know, everyone's not going to be as cheerful. Whereas if you say, oh no, if you're quick to say, it's good luck, don't worry about it, then you can just go on with the merriment and nobody has to feel bad.
Okay.
So which is pretty cool.
Very polite.
But at the same time, there's also some superstitions that say a glass breaking can mean that someone in the household is close to death. So I guess be careful about that.
That's a big, maybe this is good luck. Maybe you're family's gonna die.
Well, maybe that's why they came up with that it's good luck, because if like what you're used to thinking is, oh my god, someone in my family is gonna die, then you'd want to put your friend at ease and be like, oh no, it's good luck, it's good.
Okay, so it's lies.
It could be, maybe lies. Okay. Maybe lies, but we like it.
All right, well, if it is, it seems like if there is good luck to be had from breaking glass, you might want to do it on purpose,
maybe.
And that brings us to our next one. So we've all seen like the breaking of a bottle of wine or champagne on the bow of a ship. Now that comes to us from like, it's one of those like, is as long as we've had like written documents of like ships on the high seas, like ancient seafaring civilizations had rituals around the launching of boats. They were religious ceremonies, often involving everything from like spilling water on the boat deck to slaughtering animals and spreading ox blood on them. It's not until like the post-Protestant Reformation, like mid-1600s, that we kind of do away with a lot of the religious ceremony, and it's a bit more of a secular ceremony, which starts in Great Britain. And you had like members of the royalty or nobility would share a drink on the deck of a new ship.
Okay.
And they would each take a sip from a large goblet that was called a standing cup, after which the remains of the cup would be spread on the deck, and then the cup would be either tossed out to sea, or if there was someone lucky, to catch it, because these were expensive, fancy cups.
Ooh.
Now, at some point, it's a bit streamlined into just the breaking the bottle on a bow of a ship.
Yeah, because you can't have royalty come to your ship christening every time. Yeah. I mean, they've got stuff to do.
And you gotta have a fancy cup, and you're polluting the ocean with large goblets. It's weird. but the like all around the world has caught on. The U.S. of course, in its fledgling years, all of their early naval ships were christened thusly. It was a mixed bag of what they would christen with, you know, wine, port, whiskey. There's one story of like the USS Kentucky being christened with water, but a lot of people that were there to see the boat off brought their own little bottles of whiskey and broke them.
Hey!
Because you're going to, like, a ship that's named after Kentucky, you're going to christen with spring water?
Come on, right? Don't insult me.
Now, of course, during Prohibition, I thought this was interesting, they were not allowed to christen the boats with champagne anymore or wine. So they would christen them with cider, with juice.
Okay.
A little less exciting.
A little stickier, too. Yeah.
But of course, with the 21st Amendment, we went back to christening ships with the standard spirit that kind of took over was champagne.
Yeah.
Just still what we do now.
Champagne bottles can be pretty hard to break, though.
They can. You definitely had to have some power behind that.
Yeah. You got to do that on purpose. You know, yeah. It was on purpose. But, okay, so that's breaking glasses and bottles. What about spilling alcohol?
Mm.
Now, spilling alcohol is on accident, in general, is supposed to be really bad luck. But in Italy, there's a way to fix it. So it's considered a sin, like beyond bad luck. Like it's really, really bad to spill wine in Italy. So to counter the bad luck, you have to dip your finger in the spill and then you just rub it behind your ears and there you go.
You're cured. Smell like wine.
Yep. It's great. It's perfume. It's
okay.
Sticky a little bit and good luck. It's good luck.
All right.
But that's just spilling on accident. I think it's a little different when you spill it on purpose.
It is. So which brings us to our next superstition. We've all heard of this. Pour one out for your homies. You pour one out for fallen friends. That is also a belief, a superstition that goes back to the dawn of the recorded era. The ancient Egyptians did it. The Greeks were huge fans of this idea. They even had like two kinds of libations. Like there were ones that were poured out entirely and used for like the gods of the underworld or the heroes and the dead, and then there was another term that was like a controlled outpouring of a small amount for the dead or the gods.
A little bit more reasonable. What are they gonna do with it, honestly?
Well, and of course, like the ancient Romans, who loved to copy the Greeks, they did this as well. They actually like went as far as to like their sarcophagi and their tombstones would often be decorated with like lounging figures drinking wine to like represent the like the dead enjoying the wine in the afterlife. And there was even like a statue that I read about, or like a gravestone that was designed so that a figure on the gravestone was holding a stone chalice. But there was a drainage system through the chalice so that the wine that you would offer into the chalice would drip onto the corpse of the dead.
Ew, that's spooky.
But of course, this, you know, and this continues through time. Victorian England, it was normal to pour whiskey over the possessions of the newly dead for them to enjoy in the afterlife.
Yeah, and then also if you're just like, you know, you're going through it and drinking a lot, then it kind of gives an explanation for some accidental spillage.
It's true, yeah. Oh, I was honoring them. That's why there's just everything's covered in whiskey. Well, and even today, it's still something that's done universally. I mean, you know, we do it in the States. We pour out drinks for fallen friends.
You sure do.
Yeah. In the Dominican Republic, whenever you open a new bottle of liquor, you're supposed to pour a little bit out onto the floor. In reverence to the dead. And one thing that I've personally encountered, which I think is cool, is in Japan, especially during Obon season, which is sort of dedicated to honoring the dead, if you go to Japanese graveyards, you'll see lots of things on the gravestones, like kind of gifts and offerings, trinkets, some food sometimes, but you'll see oftentimes you'll see cans of beer and sake. Aww. On the graves. And it's the same idea. It's like it's an offering so that someone that loved sake or beer in their life has it in the afterlife.
Oh, I love that. That's so cute. What's your favorite drink?
When I first saw it, I thought it was like, I just saw it from a distance. As you're walking by a graveyard, I'm like, oh, that's somebody left beer cans on somebody's grave. That's terrible. I was like, wait, they all have beer on them. This must be a thing.
They're having a graveyard party.
I know. This is a cool graveyard. They're all partying in the afterlife together.
Yes. Well, okay. So if you didn't spill it, if you managed to get that alcohol into your mouth, there's still some things that could go wrong and give you bad luck. So in the Czech Republic, and we know they're really serious about beer over there, if you finish a glass of beer, you must not pour a different beer in the same glass.
Oh, no.
You can't let that mix. Even if it's a drop, you can't let it mix. It is very, very bad luck. Taking that a step further, in Argentina,
all right,
it's not just like drinking, but like pairings, like food and drink. So if you are drinking red wine, you can't do that while you're eating watermelon.
What?
It's not just bad luck. They actually believe it could make you sick or it could make you dead.
Oh, no.
Because it's believed that the fruit will turn to stone in your belly by mixing it with red wine.
Wow.
Yeah. So you gotta be careful. I mean, Even if you don't believe that, it's very much like a cultural, like, you don't do that.
It's a no-no. How often are those two things, like, how popular? I mean, I would imagine red wine is very popular in Argentina, but watermelon.
Well, in the summertime, you know, you're noshing on some melon and you're like, well, I need something to drink this down. But, you know, white wine would probably be preferred. But okay, wine's okay. But there's a bottle of red wine on the table because they always got some around here. So.
All right. Wow.
But don't. No, no, no. Don't drink that red wine.
I don't want that big old watermelon stone in my belly.
No way. It could make you dead.
Yep. Don't want that. Well, that's... All right. So that's Argentina.
Yeah, we're going around the world,
aren't we? Well, we've mentioned Russia a couple times, and then we just kind of had to make a short list of just everything you can do in Russia that
will
lead to bad.
So many.
There are a lot of ways to get bad luck via alcohol in Russia. So here's just a small selection of them. When you have alcohol, you have to drink it until it's gone. You cannot
make
sense. Yeah, I mean, that's okay. That's good etiquette, I guess. I don't know. If you're drinking shots, you can't put the shot glass back on the table if you haven't finished your shot. You've got to finish it before it can touch the table.
I feel like I didn't know that was a Russian thing, but I feel like that's like kind of a faux pas in general. Like if you're taking a shot, you have to finish the shot.
I think that that's... I think it's one of those things where we walk the line between is it tradition or is it superstition? And I think in this case, it's both. Or it's definitely tradition in a lot of places.
Yeah.
You finish your shot. Now, also in Russia, it's traditional that alcohol is poured to all people present at a gathering. So even if you're not drinking, you have to be poured a glass. If you come late to a party...
But wait, but that conflicts with the first rule, which is that you have alcohol, you have to drink it till it's gone. So they're like, oh no, you don't... We just give this to everybody. It's tradition, you know. But then also, if you don't want bad luck, you have to drink that till it's gone.
That's a catch-22.
There you go.
Maybe you just get somebody else to sneaky drink it for you.
Oh,
I think
sneaky
that's
drink.
What you do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So someone has to drink it till it's gone.
It. Yeah. Now, if you come late to a party, you have to drink a full glass. It's a penalty glass, so that's also, you know, get bad luck if you don't.
This doesn't sound like such a bad deal, though. Like, I show up late to the party, and immediately I'm handed a drink that I have to drink. I mean...
Well, and also...
Unless I didn't want to drink.
I mean, then. Yeah. So that seems like it's a reward for coming late. Now, then if you stay late, let's say you're the last guest to leave a party, you also have to drink a full glass of something on the way out as, like, sort of a good luck send-off.
Hey.
So, yeah, if you come late and stay late, you get two free drinks.
There you go. There you go. These aren't superstitions. These are life hacks.
Yeah. And then I thought this was cool. So you have to... every portion of spirit is accompanied by a touch of glass and a toast, except for funerals or commemorations. There, the touch of glasses is forbidden. So,
you don't toast.
You do not toast.
That makes sense.
And then lastly, this one is, it's tradition, it's superstition for good luck, but it's also maybe just sort of tied to some history of getting a discount on your booze. It's tradition and superstition not to let your empty bottles touch or go on your table. They go on the floor.
Okay.
But this has kind of been traced to Russian soldiers stationed in France during World War I who realized that the bar that they were at was... they'd charge them for the empty bottles on the table, not the bottles they ordered. So they would hide the bottles on the floor and then they would... dodge their alcohol debt because they would only be charged for the empty bottles on the table.
Get that floor bottle discount.
Yeah, and so that kind of... They brought that back home with them, and that became a...
it was very lucky.
Yeah,
it was very
so.
Lucky that they put their bottles on the floor.
There you go. Maybe they didn't realize the two were directly related. They were just like, wow, we get a really good discount whenever we put our bottles on the floor, so this is good luck.
There you go.
people just had a bad system for writing your check.
Yeah, that was... they. I hope they've changed that by now.
I think they have. Yeah. I'm sure they have.
I mean, for their sake.
Yeah.
I'm worried about the French. Not really. I think they're fine.
All right.
Okay. So, now that we've gone through some ways to drink your alcohol, how about some ways to fuck with it?
Oh, I love it.
Okay, so you can light your whiskey on fire. Why? I don't know. Maybe it will cure...
Because it looks cool?
It looks super cool.
It does.
But it could also cure your cold. Okay, so this is a German Pennsylvania superstition. It was believed you could cure a cold by lighting a dram of whiskey on fire at your bedside. Sounds cool. Cool firelight show, right? But there's rules. You have to extinguish it and relight the flame 3 times, after which it should be left to burn until the alcohol is extinguished. Should we try it?
Maybe. I don't have a cold. I don't know.
I have allergies. Will it cure my allergies?
I don't think it will.
Oh man.
All right. You can. There are other ways you can fuck with whiskey. Preserve your health. In Scotland, after there was a death in the house, it was customary to put a piece of metal. It was usually a nail. You'd put it in your meal, your butter, your cheese, your meat, and your whiskey as a way to ward death from entering anyone else in the house. Now, the belief was basically that the departing spirit would take all the good shit in the house to the netherworlds with them. Like, I'm dying, I'm taking your whiskey, I'm taking your cheese. And it would go bad if you didn't put the nail in it.
Okay.
Yeah. I was really, really hoping that this would be the namesake for the Rusty Nail cocktail.
It's not?
It's not. There's, like, stories, it's like, you know, from, like, the 1700s that it's... Because, like, Drambuie during Prohibition was, like, thrown in the East River. Crates were to, like, get it in, like, sneak it in. And the nails would rust. And there were rusty nails on the Drambuie crates. Rusty nail is just Drambuie and scotch. And so that's, like, as one of the key ingredients in the rusty nail. It's a myth from that. It was also, of course, as we've learned, bartenders stirring with weird shit is a big part of lore. The rusty nail might be named after a bartender that stirred a drink with a nail.
With a rusty nail? How dare you?
That's terrible.
How dare you?
More likely, maybe it's named after the rusty color that the drink takes on.
Okay.
But I'm really bummed out that some bartender couldn't have come up with the connection between the two. It would have probably been alive, right. But it would have been way cooler.
What do you do after?
So we drank all of our cursed spirits.
We've got some very good luck, some very bad luck all at the same time. Because
maybe we're dead and full of watermelon.
We can't keep track of our stomach stones or our rusty nails.
We were in Russia, which just by itself.
You know, there's so many things that can go wrong in your drinking in Russia.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, we did manage to get alcohol in our bodies, and now we've got a nasty hangover.
Oh, no.
So what are we going to do about that?
Well, there's got to be lots of logical ways to treat a hangover.
Sure, but the Irish have a really fun idea.
Okay.
It's, you go to the river, and you're going to dig a hole in the sand, and then you're going to get in the hole up to your neck. And cover yourself in sand and just hang out there for a while, I guess. I don't know how long. It's good. I guess until your hangover is cured.
That doesn't seem like a good idea. That seems like that is the opposite of what I'd want to do specifically when I'm hungover.
Well, it's maybe kind of like a cold shower because we're in Ireland, so like the wet sand is going to be pretty cold.
But you said by the riverside, right? So there's a cold body of water right there.
Yes, no, but we gotta get in that sand because it's gonna be super uncomfortable. You know, you got a hangover and now you're cold and also you've got sand in your butt.
Oh, no.
So that's just good, I guess. I mean, maybe I don't really understand this, but I will say it's probably not a great idea to bury yourself in sand.
No, I would agree with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, in wet sand, because, like, a lot of bacteria actually hides out there, including E. coli. And I would say that it's probably better to have a hangover than it is to have diarrhea.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, you know, maybe what the actual cure is that you do this once and you realize that hangovers actually are not that bad.
You never drink again.
If you want to avoid this, you just stop drinking. You never have a hangover again. And the end. That's how you do it.
Wow.
Guess what?
That was
number 13.
All right.
We didn't tell you what the numbers were, but trust
they're
us.
They're all there.
There are 13 of them.
There is one. This is not one of our... This is a superstition, I guess.
What?
It's not related to drinking, and it doesn't have anything to do with our show, but I just wanted to share it
Please
as a bonus.
Please tell me about it.
This is a bonus. There was something that I stumbled across when I was doing my research on the death rituals of Scotland that I thought was just really funny, but apparently there's a lot more to it. So reading this article about like death rituals in Scotland, and then there's this little paragraph kind of out of nowhere that's like, and you know, in the event of a death in the family, you must inform the bees.
Oh yeah. Thing.
You must go to your bees, and in a hushed tone, which is important, you must whisper to the bees.
Excuse me, bees. I'm so sorry to tell you. There has been a death in the family.
You have to tell your bees, and then you tie a little black ribbon around the hive so the bees are in mourning.
No, yeah.
But then this is a whole thing.
It's a whole thing. You have to put your bees into mourning. It's like, okay, so if you've got bees... well, I mean, even if you have to tell the bees about everything, man, if you have a wedding, you have to decorate the hive and leave them a little piece of cake. Otherwise, your marriage is supposed to have bad luck. And in the case of death, if the bees are not put into mourning, terrible misfortunes befell the family and to the person who bought the hive. There's a biologist that wrote about this. So Margaret Warner Morley, in her book The Honeymakers, cites a case in Norfolk when a man purchased a hive of bees that belonged to a man who died, and the previous owner had failed to put the bees into mourning, causing the bees to fall sick. So they had to cover it with a black cloth, cover the hive, and put the bees into mourning for them to get better. There's paintings. It's not well. I'm gonna put the pictures on our Instagram.
Okay, so this is your little bonus superstition. Get all that drinking stuff right, but also tell your bees everything.
You have to tell them everything
in a hushed tone.
In a hushed tone, because they're very sensitive bees
and small.
So small. Excuse me, bees.
Tell your bees.
I know you're very upset about this. Don't fret my bees. Everything will be okay.
Oh, no. All right. Well, that's...
That's good. Okay.
That's what... Well,
thank you, bees.
And listeners.
And listeners.
And bees that are listening to this.
Any bees that are listening. Thank you, bees. Thank you, listeners. And thank you all of our lovely, wonderful, wonderful people on Patreon who are joining us there. We are going to have new and exclusive content for you very soon, so look out for that. If you want to be one of our Patreon supporters, you can follow the link in our show notes below. If you do decide to support us, we are asking our supporters to send us a booze-related question that we will answer on the podcast at some point. Also, thank you, everyone who tweeted about the show this week, and that is Purple Worm, Austin Wills, Boozed Up in Gaming, Reginald, Becca Ackland, Lohi, Dorothy Hoover, Andrea Rica, Jazz, and the Ladies of Strange podcast, which is cool. Thank you so much for shouting us out. And thank you anyone we miss. Thank you so much. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at NeatTheBoozeCast. Thank you to Absurdist for our theme music. And oh my gosh, thank you everybody who gave us a review on iTunes. They're so super nice. Thank you. Don't forget to head over to our YouTube channel and check out our cool superstitious cocktails we're about to make for you.
For sure. I'm gonna mix red wine and watermelon.
No, don't do it. Stop me. No, you can't. Stop me. You're gonna die.
I'm the bartender. I'm in charge.
You could be a dead bartender.
Oh, well, we're both gonna drink them. So I've been Taylor Smurl.
And I've been Liz June.
And this has been Neat.